Mathis, you can introduce the first topic.
Yes, we have three on the agenda, and I would like to slide another item on the other items section to briefly discuss the Short Street Garage, how we move forward on the bids. That should only take about 5 minutes at the end. So first overview I'd like to update you on is the radio infrastructure project update presentation. Jim Schwartz is here to give us that update. Jim.
Thank you. Good evening. Mr. Mathis has asked that I do a brief presentation on the update of a very large project that is very crucial to our public safety user agencies here in Columbia and Boone County. So we have had a radio infrastructure project going on now since about 2003. What it is we are the hub, if you will, of the fire, police, and EMS agencies throughout Columbia and Boone County. And this is about the radio, how they talk to us, we talk to them. We have 8 channels that are repeated, and they're listed there for you. The various tower sites that we have, some are in progress, some are completely done, are listed on the map, and they are broken down into transmit and receive, and some are both. So as you can see on the map, they're color-coded for you, and you can see where they are located throughout the county. And I'm just going to feature a couple of those this evening. The whole point is, if you can see the talk-in coverage, is the entire system, as the field units try to talk to us, the more green, the better, if you will. This shows what, because of our topography, because of how we are laid out in this city and county, it shows the various areas and what and how they can talk to us. And obviously there are some trouble areas in and around the county that we have been working on for the past several years. This is a little bit closer up view of Columbia itself. So within the city of Columbia, as you can see, there's a lot of red off to the west. We've had a lot of trouble in that area with the units trying to talk to us. And of course, we're always concerned about their safety, so we are trying to work on that. Again, this has been a project going on since 2003 with a CIP as of fiscal year 10. So if you look at the entire project, it's about 95% complete. It started in 2003, and this is just kind of an overview of the entire county. So as you can see, we're going to have a lot better coverage at the end of this project upon completion of the infrastructure, which will be spring of 2012. So we're just around the corner from just a few months away of having this. So Mr. Mathis thought it'd be a good idea to update everyone. There's several different sites we have. We have 4 transmit, and obviously transmit are those sites that in the system it sends signals out. So there are 4. The main one that you may know where it is the Grissom building. That is the shed outside. We always have sheds with our tower sites. The inside of it, you can see some of the equipment and not the actual pole itself. So if you've ever seen that, drive by Grissom building, it's sitting there. And that's the one right in the middle of Mr. Glasscock's parking lot, so we appreciate that. The Route NN, this is kind of an old and a new version. As you can see, we're trying to put fences around it, trying to make it secure, obviously, because this depends on our public safety in general. We have several sites that are transmit and receive. We try to stay away from that just because of the interference between the frequencies. So we have several of those. This is one of our older ones out in Roachport. As you can see, we replaced the shed, and we're redoing all of these different sites. In addition, when it's needed, in addition to moving towards the FCC narrowbanding mandate of January 1st, 2013. So we're kind of doing several different purposes at the same time with all these different areas. I wanted to point this out specifically because the tower that you see was the one that was donated to the City of Columbia by Timberlake. And we actually took it down about a month or so ago, laid it down Orr Street, dismantled it, took it out to its new site in Harrisburg. And it is on the land that is donated by Dr. Ira Hubble out of Coyote Hill. And not only did Mr. Hubble say it was okay to put a tower on his land with no money whatsoever, Commissioner Robb was very instrumental in getting that piece of property for us in agreements in place. So I just want to point that one out. It's a very special site for us, very much needed in the Harrisburg area. We have several receive sites. Obviously, those are in the system, the radio system itself, where the signals are received. You can see there's numerous ones. One of the most ones you, popular, obviously, that you would know about is there's a white pole on our Columbia Police Department Joint Communications Building where several of you come and go. And there's the shed inside of the parking garage, and there's the inner workings of it inside, just a view of what's inside these sheds and all the equipment. And just recently we signed an agreement with the University of Missouri for KOMU, so they allowed us to put some radio antennas and feed lines and a shed out on their property as well. We have a couple miscellaneous sites and some of the more popular ones. We Walnut Water Tower, the old shed and the new shed there. It's just up on Walnut Street, and that's it.
Questions, Council?
What were the yellow areas on those maps?
The yellow.
The partial coverage?
I'm sorry, you're talking right, these right here?
Yes.
That's going to be some of the more yellow gray areas.
That's the yellow's the best coverage?
I think you can see it a little bit better here, maybe panning out a little bit, simply because you can see where the actual towers are in relation to the coverage. And that was Mr. Scott Patterson. He's with Joint Communications. He's the radio guru.
I was going to ask, it seems like it's red along the State Katy Trail, and is that just because of the topography?
Yes.
And I'm assuming that at first I was concerned, but then I'm thinking you don't get a lot of calls that you respond to there. Is that correct?
We don't. However, a lot of those areas, again, you have to remember if it's the phone, it's a different system. This is merely the portables or the handheld radios from the units that are out there. So if they are walking along, that's another story. If you're talking about phones and calling in, can people get help? That's different towers and
right.
different systems.
Right, and that's so typically you don't actually have to have the two-way talk and people can call for help.
People can still call for help along the trail, yes.
And great, thanks.
Your budget good? Have you had enough money to do everything you needed to do?
Well, now that you bring that up, no, it is good now. We actually talked about this for this coming fiscal year, so it has been covered. It started out in 2009. The previous city manager asked that we look at what it would cost to finish this. It's been kind of languishing since 2003 because of money. And so he's indicated that CIP money would be available, and we estimated about $1.6 million in 2009. Over the last two and a half years, because of the different equipment, the price of equipment has gone up a little bit, and how we are linking to pay a little bit more on the front end so that in the long run that we benefit, things have changed a little bit, and we were about $232,000 short, bringing it to about $1.8 million project, and that was already covered in this past budget year and has been accounted for, and the user agencies, just so everyone knows, pays a percentage into our budget. So city doesn't pay all of that. It is broken up by percentage.
Thank you, Sam.
We're good now. Thank you.
Very good. Next topic. Intergovernmental relations, otherwise known as lobbying, and our relationship with the federal and state government, not to mention with the county government. So this is an area where cities ignore it at their peril, and if you become actively engaged, you can sometimes have good outcomes. So Tony Messina has agreed to take on that role for me, for all of us, and has prepared a nice overview of some thinking we've put in to this area and are suggesting as an approach as we move forward. So Tony, would you take us through?
Thank you. Good evening. Yes, you received in the last couple of current events a draft policy, a list of possible federal priorities, some other additional information to help prepare you for this evening. I don't know how many of you have seen this little illustration in your civics class, but this is from the Missouri General Assembly site, How a Bill Becomes a Law. And I've always been amused by the happy little bill as he comes in, he's introduced in the House and the Senate, and apparently has to fight it out from time to time to get the appropriate provisions passed. But I think this is a good illustration of the complexity that's involved, not just at the state level, but if you multiply this times two and include Congress, you've really got a lot of moving parts. And I think an important thing that we need to do for you is to help keep you informed on how your priorities are progressing through both the state and the federal processes. We've had a process, but my observation since I've been here for a little over 5 years is that we weren't necessarily linking our legislative priorities to a larger vision, so to speak, that there were varying levels of council involvement. Sometimes council was involved in deciding what a position would be, and sometimes possibly not, and that there has been relatively little public awareness of how the city council and city administration determines what priorities are and how they're progressing through the sessions. So I would propose that our larger purpose really relate back to the community vision. And what is proposed in the policy are some paraphrases of each of those 13 vision areas. There are also priorities that you've adopted in the budget. I think a lot of those come under many of those vision categories, but what the vision really hasn't mentioned is anything about living within our means, which is something that the city manager proposed and you agreed with. There may be other larger purposes that you want to consider and include in a policy, and maybe those are specific subject areas, or maybe those are other broad principles as you think about these. The continuing council involvement we're looking at is to provide you with enough background on an issue that it enables you to make a decision about whether you'd like to support, oppose, or stay neutral on something, that you be able to make a collective council decision on this, not anything in isolation, that you get continuing reports on the status of legislation, and that we have a process for coming back to you when additional action is needed. Frequently, bills that start out looking pretty good get changed pretty significantly by amendment, sometimes with substitutes. And I think one thing that would be useful would be to look at how bills appear to be at mid-session. When I say mid-session, that's the state session. In March, there's a spring break. And then when the General Assembly comes back after spring break, that's when things really get going. And you really need to be aware of how amendments are happening and if things are going to pass or not. So that's a good opportunity to say, this is what happened during the first half of the session. Here's where we think things might be going. Do you want to add anything to your previous positions? I think the public would appreciate knowing more about the legislation that's important to the City Council, and by definition, that's important to your constituents. We can provide additional information through council agenda materials, and I like the idea of regularly engaging with our partners in the community, and we have a lot of them. The school system, the county, the Chamber of Commerce, boards of commissions, there are any number of people and organizations that are probably going to be kind of interested in what you're thinking about legislatively. And to the extent that maybe we can generate some collective support for something, I think that would help us make a bigger impact. Just a few words about our federal priorities. These tend to be very heavily oriented toward infrastructure, things like our transit system, certainly the airport. With the departure of earmarks, that's a pretty significant change for us because we depended on our senators and on our U.S. representative to really look out for us and try to insert some of our financial needs into legislation. That just doesn't happen so much anymore, and I don't know anyone who knows when that might change. So if that option is diminished, then another option is working not only with your delegation, but also with funding agencies to make them aware of the needs that we have and to really make sure that we've got our ducks in a row, to make sure that we're in plans and that we've got appropriate information before people who are making decisions. One of the things that these federal priorities and initiatives help us do is live within our means. So for every federal dollar we can bring in, that's one less dollar we have to look at charging someone who's using a service or charging a taxpayer. Our priorities that we've proposed in the material sent to you are these, in these categories. And I think it's less than $200 million altogether. On the airport, that range reflects the low end is without construction in phase one, and the high end is with construction in phase one. So that reflects a phase one and a phase two set of improvements. And then finally, the suggested council action is that you consider this and at some date adopt a policy, either as is or amended, that you adopt the federal priorities as is or amended, and that you adopt both of those in a single resolution. And I think one special consideration is timeliness. There may be times when waiting for a council meeting and a full collection of all of you may hurt our ability to communicate. Those might be times when you would authorize the city manager to communicate on your behalf, or maybe just the mayor on your behalf. These are some points we wanted to bring to you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I don't have a question, but I have a statement. I don't know if there are any questions before I yak.
I had a question. So would you be, or are you then the main liaison person with the Missouri Municipal League?
That would be part of my role.
Okay.
What I wanted to point out is that the way the state legislature works now, I think this is a good idea, because the way the state legislature works now, we have our legislators are term limited, so we do not have the deep bench experience in the legislature that there used to be, and the process is also more hectic and quicker, and it's not so much that the lobbyist is going there and trying to influence, but the lobbyist is actually making sure, because the legislators can't even tell always what's happening to a bill. They make a deal, they go to a meeting, during that meeting something's happening to their legislation, and the legislators are so busy that the lobbyist performs the role of actually walking up and down the halls and making sure that everything's happening that was agreed. And so it's really not so much that we're going and asking the state, this is at the state level, it's just the way that it works is the lobbyist is the person that makes sure the bill stays on the schedule and that the senator or legislator knows to be there. So in that sense, I think this is highly appropriate. Our state legislators will explain this in detail to people that want to know about it. And the state legislature doesn't have the staff that the federal legislature has, legislators have, but the same problem exists. It's not so much trying to win influence or bend people's thoughts as to actually simply make them aware of what's available, and a lot of what we want is just small and falls off the plate while they're arguing about things like the payroll tax holiday and that sort of thing. So I think this is highly appropriate, and I hope my colleagues agree.
And we would continue our relationship with our contract lobbyist at the state level. It's extremely important that we not just relate to legislators right before the session and during the session, but there's a lot to be said for those continuing relationships, and I hope that we can make all of them feel as well informed as I'm hoping that we can make you feel.
Yeah, I would really appreciate that, because, for example, what was the thing on the federal, there was something about trucking or highways that the emails went around recently. I had a hard time following that, and that would be, I guess that's a great example of what you're trying to incorporate in a more unified process.
Well, as a matter of fact, Senator McCaskill responded to that, that she too opposed that measure, and that I believe, at least for now, it appears to be tamped down. But of course, when Congress goes back in January, they'll be taking up some other bills where those amendments might also appear. So we'll need to remind people again.
Right.
Thank you very much.
So just to give you a sense on next steps, we've given you a lot to think about, read. We'll probably bother you again in January-ish to see if you're comfortable with establishing that as our sort of process moving forward.
Are we going to receive that so we can review it, or do we have it?
Because I'm pretty sure you have it. Tony, we've already transmitted the proposed process about intergovernmental lobbying council. Yes. We'll double check. We'll make.
Yeah,
we'll
it doesn't hurt to resend it to us.
Most of you have a look like you haven't seen it, so we'll make sure you get it. Obviously. All right. Very good. Moving on, we have some good news, and I'm very proud of this news. I'm not going to steal John's thunder. So John Blattle, our finance director, Laura Peebler, budget officer.
All right. Wanted to kind of give you a quick overview of how we ended up fiscal year 11. All these numbers are unaudited at this point, but I want to let you know, just so you're, our guiding principles are, one, transparency and living within our means, and that means budget revenues conservatively and anticipate actual revenues 2 to 5% over estimated budget, and budget expenditures at the maximum foreseen exposure, and anticipate actual expenditures at 98% of budget. So here is, to give you a quick overview, we start on the left with actual fiscal year 10, and the blue line is funding sources are revenue, and the red line is funding uses are expenditures. And as you can see, we ended up adding to our cash on 10 by 900,000. Our original budget for 11 was that we would use 3,109,000 of our fund balance to balance our budget. In July, we estimated, because revenues were coming in above our budget and expenditures were below budget, that we would have a small surplus of 498,000. We actually wound up the year at 1.3 million of revenues over expenditures as far as increasing cash. Our adopted budget for 12 projected a use of $2,300,000 of fund balance to again balance the budget because of trying to close that gap. As you can see, we're trying to close the gap from $3 million that we budgeted in 11 to 12 to 2.3 million, which is an 800,000 shrinking the gap. However, due to the bettering of the economy, it looks if our revenues come in FY12 at the very same level they came in at 11, and our departments again hold expenditures to 98% of budget expenditures, we will actually end up FY12 at a $380,000 revenue above expenditures, and will not use any of the fund balance that we had. So that's what it looks. That is our best guess at today.
John, let me jump in while you're on the slide. I think this one tells the whole story. Really, we'll have more details after this, but. I'm very proud of the staff, the management staff here. Revenue came in greater than expected. That's always excellent. We'll take it. But the big story here is we exercised incredible fiscal discipline to get there. We didn't spend it if we didn't have to. And so that's why we've ended up in a positive situation at the end of the year. I just wanted to stress that and, again, share with you my pride in the management team of the city, most of whom are out here. They make the tough decisions when they could spend money to not do it. So that's tough when you're in the government, right?
What does 98% of budgeted expenses, what is that number? What does that represent?
That would be the, that's when we're looking at the funding uses. It's $75,487,903 under actual for 11.
So
we're talking about only general fund here.
Yeah, that was.
I'll just point out, we still are budgeting the year to use fund balance to get through the year. And as we trim that, if we trim it 2%, we're out of that practice. And so we've got that three-year plan to stop that business practice of budgeting a deficit, basically. So it isn't a deficit because we don't allow that to happen. But rather than budget using fund balance, we will manage our way out of that practice. But for now, we are still, it's about a 2% underspend we need to hit.
Do you know why the pilot payment, pilot revenues are so much ahead of budget?
Yes, sir, I do. It's weather related. If you go to, let's flip ahead to slide number six. Look at slide number six. You will see that pilot tracked very close in 11 to 10 until we got to July, August, and September. And because of the weather conditions in July, August, and September, people used more electricity and more water than they did in 10. And pilot basically is a gross receipts type tax. So if utility usage goes up, pilot goes up. And it's directly, you can see on those 3 months.
We get a sales tax and a gross receipts tax. Are those two separate?
Yes, they are, sir.
So we get a sales tax of 7.5% plus a gross receipts tax of 7.5% on the utilities.
On utilities, there is no state sales tax of 4%. So there's no, it's only 3.5. The only local is charged on utilities.
Plus the 7.5% pilot.
Yes, sir. That is correct.
Mm-hmm. Well, water and light occupies an awful lot of property, and I'm gathering that that's in mostly in lieu of property tax, is it?
That is correct.
Mm-hmm.
It's in lieu of property tax, but you assess it on the receipts, is that correct?
It flows through. That is correct,
that's
Mayor.
That's how you get the number.
Right. We assess it to the water and light department, and the water and light department then passes it on through electric and water bills, correct?
I wanted to go back to slide three for just a second. This just has 10, 11, and 12. And if we had 08 and 09 on there, I think we might remember how frightened we were when the recession or depression started. So this is actually very good news that it's, you know, a few million dollars on a $75 million general fund is a lot, and we have huge issues to tackle. So I know that staff has sacrificed quite a bit. There have been unfilled positions, and the raises weren't great, and there have been other changes. But I really think this is wonderful. And the other thing is we can't count on hitting the new estimate versus the adopted, because if things go south in Asia, we may really be back at budget, which is a $2 million deficit.
So. Correct. But I just wanted to give you an indication of if everything stayed the way it currently is, mm-hmm. That's where we're at.
Right. Right. Things.
I hope the economy improves even more than it has in that 12 is even better than 11. so.
Yeah, well, we can hope for that because we have huge issues to face in 2012.
Correct.
That shows a lot of discipline. I'm pleased at the way you're doing it. Just as a little aside, in the private sector at Boone, they're expected to hold lower expenses by 1% every year, and biometric increased productivity 1% a year. And those represent two of the five key result areas that are involved in substantial amounts of their salary. So they're highly motivated to achieve those benchmarks.
Okay.
You guys are doing it without that, and I'm pleased to see that.
Okay, thank you.
I don't know if that would be something we should discuss. Mr. Beckman can maybe tell us if that's legal in the public sector.
We can delve into that at some length, maybe at another time. But we do, in fact, have a system. It's just not funded at the moment. Part of our fiscal discipline.
Good. To kind of break down the general fund, and we kind of discussed the pilot already, and when you compare actual 2010, estimate 2011, and actual 2011, you can see that they're, for the most part, they are increasing. The three main growth areas are sales tax. We estimated in July that sales tax growth for FY11 would be 4%. It actually came in at 5.8%, and as you'll see in a later slide, it really we had a really good September. And we already talked about pilot and G&A and grants. We also had our grants went up a little bit. Other things were fairly constant.
I figure I may not be the only one to know. Just for the public record, G&A is what?
General and administrative expenses.
Oh, I see. This would be money paid into the general fund from other funds for the administrative services.
That is absolutely correct.
The rate.
That Thanks. Is correct. Absolutely correct. Okay. Monthly sales tax collections. As you can see, we started October was up, but then the rest of the year tracked very closely to 10 until beginning in April it was up slightly, and then June was close, and again through August, and then in September it jumped up again. So, and fortunately, October and November have continued September's good performance. So
you lag a couple of months on these sales tax numbers, right? You get these from the state?
That is correct.
And again, we've lamented this before, but the inability to track sales tax, hotel tax contemporaneously makes it hard for us to know the effect of Roots and Blues, football weekends, street closures, et cetera. So if you can figure out a way to track that more easily, it would help us make better and smarter decisions about what events we can focus on.
Bob, I think other than surveys, there wouldn't be a way to do that because most vendors will pay their sales tax. Does any vendor pay more frequently than monthly? Or any? No. So monthly is the most frequent. You'd have to rely on the, I don't know if we could get some cooperation among some merchants to participate in some kind of system where they'd voluntarily report into a neutral party, such as, I don't know, a marketing firm or an accounting firm that would, sort of the way that LIBOR is computed in the interbank market is they all report in confidentially so that they're not revealing anything about their own books, and that would require a trusted entity to do that.
Is the hotel tax reported monthly also?
Yes.
To the county? Or does that go through the state?
We get it through 4%. The city. Yeah. We get it monthly. The city collects it monthly, the hotel motel tax. There are some large retailers that do pay the state. They call it quarter monthly, which basically means weekly.
Oh, right. I forgot about quarter
but
monthly.
They do report quarter monthly, but the state only gives the city the numbers on a monthly basis. We do not get the weekly breakdown.
Right, and quarter monthly wouldn't help us for two reasons. One is quarter monthly must mean something like weekly, which isn't fine enough for what Bob's talking about. Second, that's only the big merchants, and I think our impact with Roots and Blues will be the small merchants.
Right, the hotels and motels would not be large enough to fall into that category.
This might be a good project for the CID if they can convince some merchants to go along.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, I was noticing for September that Roots and Blues was in September this year rather than October. So although it's not on this chart, do you know what the spread was for October between 2010 and 2011?
Spread for 11 was about the same percentage up as the one in September. And November is even a little bit better than September and October. So it's not only Roots and Blues. There's something else driving it.
Well, actually, we could come back to the weather because we would know from the pilot what amount of the sales tax is from water and light.
That would be a little bit of the effect, but I think there's other things. Because of the detail that I can break out by categories, it's more than that.
Yeah, you're seeing general economic improvement.
I am seeing general economic improvement from several categories.
The Chamber of Commerce doesn't have you talk at the Economic Outlook Conference.
Too optimistic.
All right. We already talked about pilot. General fund expenditures. Just to give you an idea, again, the same type of presentation, actual 10, budget 11, and actual 11. And you can see in all categories, the actual is slightly less than the budget. And overall, we came in at 98.12% of actual of what was budgeted, which is right at the 2% that we shoot for. On the next slide, what we tried to do here is to give you a presentation kind of on a quick, so you can look at this and see, obviously green is good, yellow is caution, and red is we need to pay close attention to the funds. We group the funds that are green at the top, yellow, and then followed by red. We also have orange to denote planned use of capital projects that we built where we build up balances, particularly if you look at capital improvement sales tax, transportation sales tax, and public improvement fund. With those three, what we do is we accumulate the revenue over a certain number of years, and then we do major construction projects. So just because you see a fairly large decrease, for instance, in capital improvement sales tax, a decrease of $1 million, in the actual cash year, that was planned because of construction projects. So,
and I gather the projects are coming in under budget. It seems like several that have come before us have come in under budget just because of the construction climate.
That is correct. Although that may change if the economy continues to improve, but that has been the recent past. Yes.
That's the downside of the upside.
Yes, sir. That is correct. Any questions on any particular funds on this page?
Parking related to the how much of that's related to the parking meter increases?
Some of that is related to parking meter increase. I don't have the exact amount with me on that, but yes, there is. They are parking revenue is coming in exactly at estimates, and I did look at that, and we estimated $650,000. So that would be about $55,000 a month increase due to the increase in parking fees.
Yeah.
And we started that in July. So we would have, in these fiscal year numbers, we would have about 2 months. It took us about a month to get all the meters cycled to the new rates. So there's about August and September, there's about 2 months of additional, that would be about $100,000 of additional revenue due into parking meters then.
Well, I understand there's better enforcement as well. And
that is correct, but parking enforcement fines go to the general fund, and this is the parking fund.
Right, although better enforcement leads to
more people feeding the meters.
Yeah, better avoidance of the enforcement. And I totally forgot to call staff about this. I'm sure it went up the regular chain of command, but I was talking to one of the people who writes the tickets, and a lot of meters were jamming because they were full. So maybe that's a good thing for December. Maybe that's a good projection for December sales tax. And I'm sure that I'm hoping they got out there to empty the meters more often. But
okay.
That's
I'm expecting a newspaper article from, I was interviewed by a reporter who is reporting on parking meter increases and enforcement increases, and is relating the parking meter revenue to the temperature and to whether or not it rains. So that'll be an interesting.
That will be an interesting analysis.
Yes.
And that's data we could get on a daily basis, presumably. Oh, the meters aren't emptied daily, but the technology, which is
but coming there's up. A record of parking fines daily, and the weather report can you can backtrack the temperature and whether it rained that day. So that's what they've done.
John, does the $1.6 million projected 2012 cash balance include the $1.25 million paid back for the lot on Short Street?
That would be part of it. It's it depends on how you, I mean, you add all the numbers together. It depends on how much of that revenue, how much of that fund balance we wind up needing to build if we build additional floor that we're talking
so
about.
Setting that aside, shouldn't the balance be $2.8 million?
Well,
if you paid it back.
If you paid back and didn't build the additional floor.
Okay.
But if you pay it back and then build the additional floor, then that balance goes down from 2.5 to 1.6.
But my point is the actual cash ending balance should be $2.8 million?
It would be, right, if we...
If we don't do anything with the garage.
Right.
Okay.
And the balance in the fund in we've already purchased the land, we purchased that on December 1.
And paid cash for it.
And paid cash for it, yes, sir. So we do not have that cash right now.
Then the question comes up to me, we're issuing bonds for $9 million and $500,000 of that is contingency money. Why wouldn't we pay contingency out of our $2.8 million and not borrow that money?
We're going to get into that in just a minute with analysis I have, if you would mind holding that.
And also the bond fee to issue bonds.
Right.
Why would we borrow that money?
Okay. I have those answers, and I have an analysis to provide for you on that.
The thing that really sticks out to me is the bottom line. The transit is $746,000 below the recommended 16%.
Yes, sir.
And that really sticks out.
Well,
big.
I seem to remember the original, maybe I'm remembering an earlier budget, but I seem to remember the projected cash balance, which is the second to last column, being less than $185,000 at the end of the year. I seem to remember something more like $60,000. So am I correct?
That is correct. Revenue has, semester passes went up mm-hmm. at the end of the year. We had some additional sales on that we didn't anticipate when we put the budget together. And the ad revenue has come in above projections also. Those two items cause that difference.
Yeah, and that's very, when you're that close to zero, that's very happy news. We can
yes, sir.
It sort of underscores that old saying, there's no such thing as bad press. the press about transit has helped generate more ad revenue, I think, for people being reminded that there is a great ad alternative, you know.
Okay.
It won't save the budget, but it'll help.
Every little bit helps. I like to, people ask about the advertising because it does dilute the brand of transit, but it does, the ad revenue is just about what we've needed for the paratransit and low-income fares, so it serves a good purpose.
The transportation sales tax fund being $1.4 million below the 16%, is that due to the $1.6 million subsidy we put in every year?
Yes.
So that fund, what's that? What's the generation of that sales tax a year? Well, how much does it generate?
About almost $10 million, $9.6 million.
A year?
Mm-hmm. The capital,
right?
The transportation sales tax.
If you look, if you'll look at the sales tax number on page 4. The general fund sales tax is a 1%, and the transportation is a 0.5%. So you can do the math real quickly. So if at the general fund actual wound up at almost 19.9, so half of that would be just a slight bit under 10 million. Okay. So, but that's what comes in.
And what the public voted on with the transportation sales tax, was this fund zero at the time of the ballot issue, or modulo of projects that were started and not finished? Because was it renewed
The transportation sales tax is a permanent tax.
That's a permanent tax.
That's permanent.
So
the capital improvements tax will be due for renewal in 15.
And is there an intent to bring the balance to zero at the time it's put before the voters? So that would be one that should go to zero and therefore should go red.
Right.
Modulo,
right.
Of course, of that you can't always get all the projects out the door by the sunset of the tax. And given the value of the capital improvements, we hope the voters would like that renewed. But so since the transportation sales tax fund is permanent, it actually should have a balance, except that most of the calls on that fund are planned and predictable. They're capital projects, correct? So is there a need for that to be at
16%? Some of the transportation sales tax gets used for operating also.
So
it's
we
not
should,
only capital.
So we should be at 16%. As well,
we're trying to use that as a guide for an appropriate fund balance because that's what you've established as a objective for the general fund. So we're using the same for all funds.
Yeah, we just do 16%. It makes the math makes it simpler.
Yeah, and let me just add because, for example, transit relies so heavily on transportation sales tax. The realities in transit are also reflected in the transportation sales tax. So we've had to go pretty low there to keep transit from going bankrupt sooner.
Yes, I'd forgotten about that, that subsidy, as Gary points out, does go out the door as it's called on, although it's limited to what we budgeted. And I presume that if we transfer the $1.5 million is we budgeted, and if transit runs out of money, that's its own issue because that's what we've budgeted out of the transportation sales tax. Am I correct? Even clear?
Yes. And so if there were a different year and there was a lot of money in the transportation sales tax fund that we hadn't spent, you could, choose to bail out a fund that was doing poorly.
Mm-hmm.
That's not an option we have.
Right. Given that we've shortchanged the road maintenance so much and other operations.
We put a lot into the airport from the transportation sales tax.
That's right. Yeah. It funds streets, airport, and transit.
Mm-hmm. And we really kind of, we're doing the minimum on the streets.
Well, I guess I would agree with that statement by saying the survey suggests that the community feels that way.
Mm-hmm. Putting $6 million into it.
Yeah. It's the number one expenditure, I believe, from transportation in the streets.
I mean, I guess I was thinking of it in terms of are we deferring maintenance to the point that we're not maintaining the quality of what's already built? That was kind of what I meant by the minimum. that we, you know, we certainly don't want to get to where New York City was, where they weren't painting the bridges and then they were having to be taken out of service.
The fact remains, if transportation or the transit tax was, if it paid its own way, you could increase street maintenance by 50%, $6 million to $9 million.
If what? If the buses? They're not going to pay their own way, though.
Well, yeah, they're going to rely on the, because the public derives a benefit. That's why it's this way. The public derives a benefit from the existence of the bus system, even the public that doesn't ride it. Because your employee or your employer or your family member may ride the bus even if you don't, and we all benefit from the reduction of congestion.
Even Ames, Iowa, who has the heavy Iowa State subsidy, has a dedicated city transportation tax of about $1.3 million. So you're not going to escape that.
Your plan didn't call for a subsidy, did it?
Well, if we followed the Iowa State model, it would. I mean, I don't see as you can get away from that.
All right. Utility funds, again, the same color schemat. None of the funds are in red. Stormwater is yellow because even though we have a decent fund balance there, we have a lot of capital projects that are unfunded, so we know that there's concerns.
One thing that would help with this graph or this presentation for the next time we see this is to have percents as well as dollars, because $21,645,000 looks huge for water and light, but that's probably not very many percent over 16%.
Okay. I'll make sure we add that next time.
You know what caused the swing from in water and light from 12 million increase to 8 million decrease?
Capital projects.
They're all capital projects?
Yes, sir.
And water and light.
And they were planned, of course.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say water and light does actually book depreciation. Am I not correct?
That is also correct, yes.
And but that wouldn't, this is cash,
this is
so
cash.
That wouldn't.
And I specifically wanted to give you cash so that depreciation wouldn't get into the equation, because
that confuses things.
Yes, it does. And that way, if we do cash, all the funds are on the same footing when you look at this presentation, enterprise as well as your funds, like general fund, that don't have depreciation.
Right. Where the depreciation is helpful is to understand the revenue versus expenses, but here it would be confusing.
Right.
But
correct.
Was the opposite true on solid waste? We had a capital project in 11 and none in 12. How does it go from a deficit to a surplus?
We also had a rate increase.
Solid waste.
Right. We had a rate increase in solid waste.
And presumably we had the rate increase to turn the red to green.
Correct. That is correct.
If I may interrupt and be so rude, we have one more item I'd love to squeeze in if we can. We've got about 5 minutes left.
Right. I do want to start the meeting on time, so let's squeeze it in.
And we,
I got one more question real quick.
Okay.
Information technology went to a $1.4 million decrease. Is that something they bought?
It's something they're going to buy.
Okay.
We took the fund balance and assigned it for the new accounting system. So that's the reason.
And that will save a lot of money.
Yes.
I'd like to move into same cast of characters here with the addition of Tony St. Romain to discuss the Short Street Garage. You remember the last time we met, I sort of suggested that we do a bid alternate as we look at doing the garage. Council indicated consensus that that would be the way you'd want to go. My staff has talked me out of it, and I wanted to give them a chance to give you the pros and cons as they see it. And so so I've asked them to do that. I think there is a compelling reason to think about that, to rethink that. And so we'll try to convince you tonight that one bid is a cheaper way to go at the end of the day.
Just for a quick bit of background, at the last council meeting, I think Mr. Kesspel indicated that council had never really formally approved a 410-space garage. And so, and that may be true. I don't think there was actually a formal motion taken, but looking back at the October the 3rd meeting, which was a work session we had with council, where we presented several options, either a 300 space garage like was originally intended, maybe finish off that extra half floor of the top, which would bring us to 340, or potentially adding another whole floor, which would get us to 410. And going to 410 with the extra floor would add about 1.2, 1.3 million. And John's going to cover again, like he did at that work session, how we might potentially be able to pay for that additional floor out of our fund balance. But, you know, if you look at just the need based upon requests that we've already had for parking spaces in that garage, you know, 410 spaces. The hotel, as you know, is committed for 100. We're still finalizing an agreement with Northlight and Boone County Family Resources, which is going to take at least 75. The last written correspondence I had from the attorney for Trittenbach, who's building the college in Walnut, was for 100. And with potentially 75 public spaces, that gets us to 350 out of a potential 410. So that leaves us about 60 permits to sell. And, you know, now we're hearing that developers are asking for maybe even a couple of hundred. If we sell another couple of hundred spaces, we'll be oversold by about 140 spaces. So there's certainly a need for that larger garage. The issue is, does council want to spend we got a quote from Walker Parking for the change order that it would take to redesign part of that garage so they could actually do bids, one for a 340-space garage and another one for a 410. There are several design changes that have to be made as part of that bid document, and that would cost about $40,000. So the question is, do we want to go ahead and do the alternate, or do we want to just going to say we're just going to go ahead and bid a 410-space garage deal with paying for it once we actually know what the actual bid price is? And John, I think, passed around a sheet that shows the cash flow. So, oh, it's actually on the overhead. So, John, do you maybe just want to walk people through that real quickly? About 2 minutes.
Okay, real fast. We to borrow $9,175,000. Your bond proceeds nets $3,894,000. Because you have to reserve the first year's bond payments, principal and interest, which is $686,000, and you have issuance fees. So out of the issue that you had talked about earlier, your net proceeds is $8.4 million, basically. Today, as of 12/12, we have $1,263,000 in the parking utility as far as cash. It's a total of $9.6 million. The budgeted entire cost to build the parking garage with 400 spaces that you're talking about is $10.8 million. That's the difference between what we have available from the bond proceeds, and that total number is the 1.2. But in that, we've already purchased the land on 12-1 of that 1.2 that you were talking about earlier, Mr. Kespool. That leaves us a net at today of $13,680. We're coming in net income of basically $100,000 a month. So between now and September 1, that's $800,000 that we would have an additional income for the parking utility. And our first bond payment is interest only on September 1 of $156,000. So that means you have an additional $656,000 that would be available between now and September 1.
Actually, aren't you double counting that bond payment because you already subtracted it out to get the $8,394,000 at the top?
Well, but we already, in the land purchase, we already purchased the land, though.
Yeah, but I thought that the $8,394,000 was after setting aside the first.
The last payment.
So that's just the last bond payment.
So the numbers happen to be almost the same, which is confusing. But the number on the bottom of this sheet is our net income from the operation of the utility versus.
Oh, you're saying it's already in the line budget numbers?
Bond, yeah.
Oh, I get you.
Yeah, it is confusing.
Happened to be really.
That is confusing.
It is confusing, yes, sir.
So I have, as a manager, I had two questions that really need to be answered. One, can we afford to build the bigger garage? And what if the bids come back more? That's the real fear. If they come back less, great. So the answer to the first question is, yes, we can afford the project we've designed. There's enough money to do that as we expect. So then the second question is, can we afford it if the bid, what happens if the bid comes back more expensive? Do we start over, which we really need not to do, right? That's the risk here. And so there's two answers that give me some comfort level on moving forward with more spaces. That is this $656,000 cushion you see there. That's before we get, you know, too far down the road. We could withstand that much. The city also has an internal loan pool. And
designated loan fund.
What's it called?
Designated loan fund.
Which the parking utility could borrow from and then pay back over time if the bids came back too great. Now, that's not something we would normally want to do, but given the market demands we know are out there for even more parking than the 400, we wanted to put this in front of you and basically say, from a staff perspective, we're as confident as we can be about a project being fundable. This one is as strong as we can come up with. And we would like to proceed with one bid. We think that saves us $40,000 at the end of the day.
I'll go along with that. We haven't seen a rendition of that extra floor, though. I'm worried about streetscape, skyscape, which was a big objection to the Fifth and Walnut parking garage. And I still think this thing is going to have to be designed very skillfully so that it's not a mammoth structure in the middle of town, because it's the hotel faces is perpendicular to this. The second thing I would point out is if you have 410 space garage and 500 people wanting to rent, maybe $60 is too cheap.
I made that observation today, actually, in a meeting earlier. If we were operating like a business, we'd charge a lot more than $60.
And we should be.
And also in follow-up, I want to make sure that we're all right with the height of the, in relation to the hotel, because we're supposed to be shorter than the hotel.
By agreement, we are supposed to be six stories or less, and we are at six stories. The hotel is seven stories.
Okay, with the 410.
Yes.
Okay.
Can you disseminate to the council an artist's rendition of that skyscape?
For the garage or the hotel?
Both together. Both. I want to know what they look like from...
Sure.
I am a little concerned if, you know, when I listen to all of these concerns, that is, if the larger garage either ends up costing too much and then we have a delay because we have to go back and redesign in order, you know, because of the points Gary brings up, this is pushing us to the edge. And then, you know, Bob's points about the we need to make sure this is going to look right. I guess this was your original argument, was it makes sense to spend $40,000, which is next to nothing in terms of the size of this project. I hesitate to go against staff recommendation on something like this because it's a technical issue.
I'm confident
that we're going to want 410 spaces, and we'll be sorry we couldn't do 500.
That's really the question. If you're confident we need the 410, then I think the staff position is.
Well, I'm confident we need 410. I'm not confident that Gary's not right, that we, you know, don't want to get in trouble here.
I think the demand. There's not a lot of inflation out there from construction right now.
I'm not concerned about the 410 spaces. I am concerned about. What's the rate on 410 spaces? Is it going to remain $60?
Well, no, that's what I...
And going to be that we can raise that? That's the question.
Because if the bid for the 410 comes back too big and we have a delay, the hotel is going to be very unhappy, and so will the public. You know, if there's a delay because we have to redesign, but I guess they're confident the bid's going to come in at
I think so. They've been talking to all of their contractors and subcontractors as they've been preparing all their engineering drawings, so they feel like their estimates are pretty accurate.
Well, I'm prepared to make a motion to proceed with just one bid, if that's what you want.
Okay.
Is that what you want?
My other question is, are we still thinking about 20-year bond or 25?
20.
20?
Yes, sir.
And what rate is 377? Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. Are you prepared to move on consensus?
Yes.
All right.
I'm getting most of the yes and nods.
It's your read.
Okay.
Well, we'll move forward with one bid.
Thank you.